Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. And we're going to be talking about the culture and cuisine of Italy. Reed Bramblett is co-author of DK's Eyewitness Italy and is a veteran travel writer. And we will be talking with Nancy Harmon Jenkins, who divides her time between the coast of Maine and Cortona, Italy. She's the author of several cookbooks, and we will find out why people are so interested in Italy. And first of all, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Your new book is Cucina del, is it Sole?
Sole.
Sole. Cucina del Sole.
That's the cuisine of the sun.
Yes. Okay. So it's a celebration of Southern Italian cooking. It's published by William Morrow, and it's just out. And thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
And Reed Bramblett is talking with us, and he's the co-author of Eyewitness Italy, published by DK, a veteran travel writer. And I believe that he's just back from Italy. Is that right?
I was in Italy about a month ago, and I'm just back from England, actually. Got back yesterday.
Reed, a pleasure to have you with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
People may not know that nearly 13 million Americans visited Europe last year, while more tourists go to the United Kingdom and to France. According to travel agencies, Italy is the country that American travelers are most interested in today. AAA Travel booked more trips to Italy this year than any other destination in Western Europe, making up 34% of all AAA bookings to the region. From the far northern Alps to the sun-soaked Mediterranean shores and islands of the south, Italy offers a kaleidoscope of regions and experiences. Reed, first of all, let me ask you the first time that you went to Italy.
First time I went to Italy, I was 11 years old. My father is a professor of art at Tyler School of Art, and he was posted there for 2 years. And so I got to live in Italy and go to Italian schools between the ages of 11 and 13.
Played a lot of soccer, I suppose.
Yes, I did. That was a lot of fun.
And Nancy, what was the first occasion for you to visit Italy?
Oh, now you're going to find out how old I am. I went there as an undergraduate in 1958. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I couldn't wait to get back. It never occurred to me that I would end up actually having a house in Italy and living there half the year and traveling around and investigating all the different subcultures of Italy. But that's what happened, and I'm very happy about that.
Reed, sort of put Italy on the map for us. It's right in the heart of the Mediterranean, but sort of located for us.
Well, it's on the southern end of Western Europe. It's a boot-shaped peninsula jutting, as you said, into the center of the Mediterranean. It also has some sizable islands attached to it, or right outside Sicily and Sardinia. And as Nancy said, it really is a land of a lot of subcultures. Almost every region of Italy is very proud of its own cuisine. Many of them have dialects that are almost unintelligible to people from other regions, so the Italian is sort of this common tongue that they all speak, but a Sicilian wouldn't necessarily understand someone from the Trentino, where they speak a medieval version of German.
Mm-hmm. If anyone would like to join the conversation with questions or comments about travel to Italy, all they have to do is call us in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And Nancy, talk about the celebration of Southern Italian cooking and why this cuisine is so beneficial to its people who eat it.
Oh well, I've always been interested in all the different cuisines of Italy and the fact that they vary so much, like the dialect, from one region to another. But when I first started traveling in the south, which it took me a long time to do that because my house is in Tuscany and I. You know, when you have a house, if you have a second house, you will know that you spend most of your time at the second house cleaning it up and weeding it out and doing all the things that one has to do. So you don't get to travel very much.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was a while that I was going to Italy before I ever even ventured into the south. But when I did, I felt as if I rediscovered the Italy that I had known when I first came to Italy in the late 1950s and 1960s. It had a kind of a sense of being other than what we're used to. You know, there are a lot of places in northern Italy now you go to and you think, I might be in Kansas City, or I might be in some town in Georgia, or I might be in some town in upstate New York, but you don't feel as if you're particularly in Italy because of the forces, the globalizing forces of our modern culture. But when you go to the South, you really feel that you're in a different place. And it's true of the cuisine as well. The cuisine, on the one hand, it's very different. On the other hand, it's very familiar to us because it's the kind of cuisine that we grew up with. Those of us who grew up in any kind of an Italian-American culture or had friends who were part of an Italian-American culture certainly know this cuisine that relies on olive oil and lots of vegetables and pasta and bread and seafood. That's the Italian-American way of eating, too. And it's a particularly healthy way of eating because of the nature of the fat that's used and also because of the quantities of vegetables and the lack of red meat that's in the diet there. And it's interesting to me that Ansel Keys, who was the first person scientist, really, to study the Mediterranean diet and the relationship between the way people eat in the Mediterranean and their generally very good health profiles, he began investigating that in the south of Italy. So it suggests that, you know, the heartland of the Mediterranean cuisine is there in the Italian south.
Now, the southern part of Italy, Naples, recognized as the birthplace of pizza, but you don't seem to be describing, you know, pizza to me.
Well, no, because there's a lot more there than pizza. And pizza, too. You know, pizza doesn't have to be an unhealthy food. We have this idea in this country, because what we do in this country is we take these simple dishes and then we add to them. We add more and more and more. We're not content with that really kind of restrained way of approaching food that all Italians have. You know, pasta, for instance, a bowl of pasta, the sauce is there to bathe the pasta, to make the pasta taste like something other than carbohydrate starch, but it's not the main point of the dish. And if you have pasta in this country, especially in restaurants very often, but also in home kitchens, what you end up with is a lot of sauce and a very little of that complex carbohydrate. And I should say a word in defense of carbohydrates at this point, because complex carbohydrates are very, very important for us, and we really need them. They shouldn't be rejected. It's those simple carbohydrates, the simple sugars and that sort of thing that can cause problems.
That's Nancy Harmon Jenkins and our other guest, Reed Bramblett, co-author of DK's Eyewitness Italy. Talk a little bit about what's contained in Eyewitness Travel Italy.
Well, the Eyewitness Guides are those sort of tall, thin, white books that you see in the guidebook section, full of pictures and photographs and cutaway plans of cathedrals and museums. They're one of the best planning guides that I know of. I write for any different series, and I can tell you that all of their strengths and the ones about the eyewitness is that you can sort of get an advanced look at everything that you want to visit, because you can read so much, but you're not going to know until you look at a picture, oh, wow, I want to go see that, or I want to go to that town.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really wonderful in helping with the trip planning. And in this most recent edition, what we really tried to do was beef up the practical information at the back of the book. Places like what kind of restaurants can you go to in Italy to try some of these fantastic regional cuisines. Great hotels, not just the same four-star chain hotels that are listed on all the booking engines, but all sorts of mom-and-pop tourist-class joints that are, you know, 8 or 9 rooms, and you get to eat with the family sometimes. So we really tried to make it more of a visceral and real experience of visiting Italy, and not just sort of the same old tourist track, discovering the kind of Italy that Nancy rediscovered when she went down south for the first time. And found the kind of Italy that she remembers from the 60s and the 50s.
As we talk about the culture and cuisine of Italy, we encourage you who are listening to join in with your comments and questions. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Of course, that's toll-free. Angel in Kenosha, let's give you a chance. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
So, Ischia, it's a little island next to Capri. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful, and nobody knows about it.
And I have a recipe from Ischia in my book.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do. I'm just flipping through the index to try and find out what page it's on.
Ischia, by the way, is the second largest of those islands, the largest next to Capri?
Yes.
Well,
and actually, it might even be larger. I'm not sure, but, you know, it's not as popular.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I loved about it was
Ischia is physically larger than Capri. It's not nearly as famous, at least not among Americans.
Exactly.
Brits, but it is a huge vacation destination for German tourists. So
yeah,
you'll find
everybody
many
thought it was
in
German.
Italian and German as opposed to Italian
yeah.
and English there.
You know, I'm blonde and blue-eyed, so everybody thought I was German.
Yeah.
And the older Italian, you know, people, it was great.
Did you have any rabbit while you were there?
Angel, I think we lost her connection there. But
because they're famous on Ischia for the rabbits.
Talk about the rabbit dish that you
have. Well, it's a rabbit dish. It's called Coniglio all'Ischitana, rabbit braised in white wine from the island of Ischia. And, you know, it was a very poor island, Ischia was, and before the Germans started coming and spending their money there. And there were fishing families that lived on very limited resources, but they also had rabbits, which they fattened in deep dishes. And the island became famous for the quality of these rabbits. And so this is a rabbit dish in which the rabbits are sautéed and then finished cooking in dry white wine and fresh tomatoes that have been chopped up and a lot of basil and some rosemary branches. And it's a wonderfully savory and simple dish. It always interests me that Americans are so resistant to eating rabbit. You know, it's a very good meat. It's very good for you. It's very low in fat. And I think it's cheap in most places, too, just because people don't want it. But it's wonderful.
Reed, are you a fan of rabbit, too?
Actually, I am. I don't get it that much in the States, but certainly in places in Italy like Ischia where they eat it, it can be a wonderful, delicious dish. It's very tender meat. I know it's a cute little bunny, too, but, hey, we eat cute little lambs and cute little calves, so it's hypocritical to say, well, I'm going to draw the line at the cute little bunnies.
Right, yeah.
But you mentioned the white wine, and Ischia has some fabulous white wines. And that's one thing that a lot of Americans don't realize is we see a lot of wine from Tuscany and from Piemonte and from the Veneto, and it's exported in large amounts. But every region, every small region, every town in Italy has its own wine, and many of them only produce enough for local consumption and where you can buy it in the local restaurants. So you'd never find it in a wine store in the United States, but you can get some fantastic regional wines over there as you travel.
Reed and Nancy, please stay with us. We're going to be pausing to catch up with the latest news, and we'll come back and we'll take some calls from Jenna, Dan, Scott, and we'll get your call in as well as we talk about the culture and cuisine of Italy. We do some armchair traveling. Reed Bramblett is co-author of DK's Eyewitness Italy. He's a veteran travel writer. Nancy Harmon Jenkins divides her time between the coast of Maine and Cortona, Italy. In Tuscany, she's the author of several cookbooks, including the new Cucina del Sole, a celebration of Southern Italian cooking published by William Morrill. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 noon, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We talk about the culture and cuisine of Italy. Few countries can compete with its classical origins, its art, its architecture, its musical and literary traditions, its scenery, or its food and wine. Since World War II, Italy has climbed into the top 10 world economies while retaining many of its customs, traditions, and regional allegiances to its agricultural heritage. And we'll be talking about that with Nancy Harmon Jenkins and Reed Bramlin. In Nancy's cookbook, you'll find out how to create a Neapolitan crisp-fried ravioli, savory bean soup with escarole, Sicilian pasta with tomato and toasted almond pesto, Pugliese layered rice with potatoes and mussels, springtime lamb with tender artichokes, and zeppo for the Feast of St. Joseph. All of that coming up after the news. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us as we talk about the culture and cuisine of Italy. And to help us do that, Reed Bramblett is co-author of DK's Eyewitness Italy and a veteran travel writer and can tell us how to get to Italy, where and when to go. And Nancy Harmon Jenkins divides her time between the coast of Maine and her home in Cortona, Italy. She's the author of several cookbooks, including the new Cucina del Sole, a celebration of Southern Italian cooking. It's published by William Morrow, and we thank both of them for spending time with us today. And if you want more information about Reed, you can find him at reedsguides.com. Is that true, Reed?
That's correct. It's R-E-I-D-S-G-U-I-D-E-S.
And what will they find there?
It's a trip planning site devoted to all sorts of ways to go to Europe, whether it's your first time or your 30th and you're looking for something different. My tagline is travel beyond vacations, because that's what I think people are really looking for when they go on trips these days. They don't just want to have the same old canned commentary coach tour. They want to get in there and experience. We were talking about the cuisine. You can experience the cuisine, not just eat it. You can shop in the markets and the shops. You can take cooking courses.
I was just about to add that you have several resources in your book for people who are
not
interested.
Not just that. I also lead culinary tours to Italy.
Uh-huh.
I do this with the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America. And we do tours to Sicily, to Tuscany and Umbria. Next year we're doing one to Emilia-Romagna. We go all over the place looking for really good food and really good wine and why it's as good as it is, what sort of lessons we can bring back to America with us to make our own food and wines better.
And what is the web address for information on that?
Well, actually, the best way to find out about it is to go to Viking Range, because the Viking Range people back these tours, and it's Viking Lifestyle. If you go to that website, you will find that these tours, not just my tours, but also other CIA tours to Mexico, for instance, to Southeast Asia, to India, are listed there.
So VikingLifestyle.com?
I think that's what it is. Sorry, I don't know the exact. I should know that.
We'll see if we can finagle around here and see if we can enter that address and see what it comes up with. But let's take some calls from listeners, and the number here is 263-1890 or 800-642-1234. Jenna is in Madison. She's next. Jenna, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I've actually lived off and on in Italy for about 2 years, for the first year in Bologna, and then 6 months
in Bologna. Wonderful, wonderful city.
Yeah, beautiful. Not very well known in the tourist circuit, that's for sure, but that's actually not a bad thing. And then about 6 months in Milan, and then another month in Sicily, and I'm marrying into an Italian family, or a Sicilian family, I should say, in the next couple months. So Italy has been very much on my radar, and I wanted to say, Nancy, I just found myself just nodding furiously when you were talking about the way that Americans eat their pasta and their pizza, and how it really just, for me, it brought up a point also that, the way that, in my experience, that Americans think of Italian cuisine and Italians in general is very Sicilian in a lot of ways, just with the we have this stereotype of all Italians are dark hair, dark skinned, and
criminals.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true. Very true. And that the food of Italy is all tomato based.
Right.
And I've been finding, I've lived in the Northwest, I've lived in the Northeast, and then I've spent a considerable amount of time in the South, and it's just been amazing to me to really see the differences in not only the cuisine, but also the cultures, as you mentioned earlier, but that both of you talked about earlier, that, the dialects can be extremely different. I find myself being on a train sometimes traveling from north to south, and you can tell who's from the north and who's from the south just in the way that they're talking and their mannerisms, and people have very different, in Bologna there's a certain way for saying, I don't know, that you would never hear in other regions. And so I appreciate you pointing those differences out, just because I think that in the United States we have a very particular idea of what Italy is.
That it's almost more homogenized than the way it really is. One of the things that I found that has always interested me is the way when dialect changes, cuisine changes too. When I live in Tuscany, I'm right on the boundary with Umbria, and down in the valley below me they all speak an Umbrian dialect, and up in the mountain where I am they all speak a Tuscan dialect, and the food changes too, not radically. They're very subtle changes, but there are certain things that you find in Umbria you don't find in Tuscany, and vice versa. And just as there are words that you find in Umbria that you don't find in Tuscany. And then when you start to talk about the difference between the Sicilian dialect and the Venetian dialect, for instance, you're really talking about tremendous differences.
They're practically different languages. A lot of the reason that we have this idea of the pasta with tomato sauce and pizza is because just the immigration patterns from Italy to the United States in the 1890s, 1920s, they all came from Sicily and from Campania and from the South. If they had emigrated from the north, then we would be thinking of risotto and polenta and butter-based instead of olive oil-based.
And thank goodness they came from Sicily, because because otherwise our health profiles would be even worse than they are today.
Thank you very much for that call. Our guest, Reed Bramblett and Nancy Harmon Jenkins. I know that many people instinctively think of Rome. I discovered that Rome is the most expensive city in Western Europe to fly into.
Is that right? According, that can't be.
Yes, that a travel, not agent, but a travel expert advised that if you can, you'd be better off going into another destination and taking a Ryanair flight for $50 or something into Rome than to spend all of that money.
Well, I don't think that's correct. I fly into Rome a lot, and I watch my budget very carefully when I'm flying, and I really think that whoever told you that is incorrect.
Okay.
It is expensive pretty much to fly anywhere in Europe. It is actually a good idea sometimes to work it out to fly into a different destination, London being the most popular for two reasons. One is that it tends to have the cheapest tickets into Europe to fly into London, largely because there's some competition between Virgin Atlantic and British Airways. And secondly, because it's sort of the hub in Europe for these low-cost airlines like Ryanair that you mentioned, the no-frills airlines.
Fact, yeah, but the real problem with that is you fly into Heathrow, and then you've got to get to Gatwick
or Luton.
Yeah, and that's not easy at all.
It can be easy. I mean, it's not easy often, and there are some drawbacks to it, but it can save you a couple $100s. It's something you need to really look into in depth, and I have a whole section of my website devoted to that. I call it the Big Win Switcheroo, and it's at nofrillsair.com, which is a subset of my website. It describes how you go about switching airports, and to make sure you look into it, to be sure you don't have to spend the night in London because the flight times don't quite link up.
Yeah, and then you spend all that you save on a hotel room. I think a much better thing to do is to fly into Dublin on Aer Lingus, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and then get a Ryanair flight to a cheap destination in Italy.
Mm-hmm. No, those work too. Yeah, but and you can also do the
same thing.
Because
then you don't have to change airports, and you don't have all that hassle of
right.
you know schlepping huge, heavy bags around on public transportation and stuff like
that. You
can also
do the switcheroo via New York. There's if you're supposed to go into London, then down to Italy, you could fly into New York and then get a flight on a new low-cost carrier called Eurofly, which flies directly from New York into not only Rome but also Bologna and Palermo. I flew direct to Palermo for $378.
That's great. Unfortunately,
good.
You know, I have certain airports that I avoid like the plague, and one of them is Kennedy. I just think it's one of the most poorly run airports in the world. What is your experience of that, Reed?
I don't think I've ever come across a wonderfully run major airport in a major metropolitan area. They all have their drawbacks. Certainly Kennedy does, and I live in New York, and I travel about 2-3 times a month, so I have a lot of experience with Kennedy, but I think everybody's least favorite airline is the one that serves their airport, and everybody's least favorite airport is the one they have to use all the time.
Right.
So I think it just comes down to travel itself is a slog and incredibly tedious and tiresome, especially with the security measures, which is why going to a fantastic destination, giving yourself the time to really enjoy it, that's the payoff.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The expense of getting there.
We had a caller from Wisconsin Dells wanted to know if you knew of any offbeat but charming museums in the Florence area.
Oh, right in Florence. The Science Museum is an overlooked museum that is absolutely fabulous and full of fascination for adults and children alike.
Right,
I would recommend that. Very, very highly.
You've got the telescopes with which Galileo discovered the moons of Jupiter. I mean, there's some fantastic, amazing things. There's another scientific museum attached to the University of Florence called La Specola, which has these amazing 19th century wax models of the human body in various states of being flayed. They were used by medical students, and it's fascinating and phenomenal.
Kids love that sort of thing.
Let's go to Dan in Milwaukee next. Dan, what's on your mind today, and thanks for waiting.
Oh, no problem. Well, I've been very fortunate. Since the late 60s, I've been traveling in and out of Italy, and in the mid-80s, I managed to live there for 2 years. And I find that the cuisine over here that they say Italian is does not represent it whatsoever. But as far as Rick goes, I think one of the most overlooked areas in Italy for tours is Sardinia. I just can't believe you look at tours and nobody ever goes there. And Sardinia has some of the most interesting ancient culture, and it's such a beautiful town.
Mm-hmm.
It's their island.
Yeah, you're
the
absolutely
only people
right.
There,
and the food is wonderful
really go
out
there
too.
Go ahead. We had two people on the same phone for a minute there.
Oh.
But if you have reaction to that, why, you're welcome to respond.
Well, I absolutely agree with him. I think Sardinia is quite wonderful, and it has a very interesting cuisine, too. There's a kind of couscous that they make on Sardinia that is called fregola, and it's a large kind of couscous, but it's really delicious, and it just points out to me, yet again, because there's also couscous in Sicily, that these... we look at a place like Italy and we see a modern country with a modern political boundary around it, but it wasn't always that way. And as recently as 100 years ago, Italy itself was divided up into many different polities, but also the whole Mediterranean. You know, there's a culture that's Mediterranean that's reflected very strongly in Italy, but it's, you know, there's a North African, the Arab influence coming in, there's a Spanish influence coming in, there's that strong Greek influence coming in, so that you've got all of these things coming together, and that's one of the things that makes the cuisine of a place like Sardinia so rich, is the impact of all those different cultures coming together there.
Reed, they offer some advice about traveling to Naples. I've heard that it's something where you really have to watch out for criminal activity.
We have to do that in any major city. Naples gets a particularly bad rap because it has a very confusing central rail station, and every rail station has pickpockets and people like that who are going to take advantage of you. And Naples, the piazza outside of the rail station itself, does seem to be one of the worst ones. But it's also extremely confusing, and a lot of people are not going to Naples. They're just getting off the train and switching to the regional commuter train. They'll take them down to Sorrento and the gateway in Pompeii and the gateway to the Amalfi Coast. And that's not well signposted or marked. You have to go downstairs and then buy a ticket for the Circumvesuviana line and go out to the separate train and then know which of the trains to get on because they all go different destinations. So I think it's the fact that it's very confusing for a lot of tourists that leaves them sort of open and prey. It's really, you just got to be smart about things. I never get pickpocketed because I have all of my important information, all my credit cards, my spare cash, my passport, my plane tickets in a money belt, which is sort of like a flat fanny pack that you wear underneath your clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have my spending money for the day in my wallet. So God forbid if my wallet ever did get pickpocketed, I'd be out $30, $40 and not have to run to the embassy and try to get a new passport issued. Little things like that. Obviously keeping alert, trying to wear travel specialty clothes that have zippers on the pockets and things like that. Just little things you can do to make yourself safer. And, of course, just being aware and paying attention.
And that's true anywhere in the world. My daughter just had her purse lifted in New York City yesterday. So I think it's these Italian southern cities often have very scary reputations that are totally unwarranted.
Okay.
I think you're as safe or safer there than you are in many major American cities.
My wife and I and two other couples are planning a trip to southern Italy in September, and we were going to headquarter in Sorrento. You mentioned that, Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Sorrento, sort of the gateway to the beauty of the Amalfi coastline?
It is. Sorrento's a fine town. There's nothing particular in and of itself that makes it interesting aside from its perfect location, because it is at the end of this regional rail line from Naples called the Circumvesuviana, which gives you quick and easy access to Herculaneum and Pompeii, these ghost towns of ancient Rome that were buried in an eruption of Vesuvius in the first century. You can hop on the bus there to take it down the Amalfi coast, the sort of daisy chain of beautiful seaside towns, Positano and Amalfi, Ravello with its gardens up on the hill. And you can also from there get a fast ferry over to Capri or over to Ischia. So it's sort of perfectly sited, and it's been that way. It's been the place where tourists go to explore the region ever since the days of ancient Rome.
Sounds great. And as far as the cuisine along the Amalfi coastline, what will I be looking for, Nancy?
Well, you've got one of the greatest restaurants in Italy to go to there. It's called, am I going to be able to remember the name of it? The chef's name is Alfonso Iaccarino. It's owned by Alfonso and Livia Iaccarino. And it's in the town of Sant'Agata sui Due Golfi, which is right out at the end of that peninsula. And it's called Don Alfonso. That's the name of the restaurant. It's a two-star Michelin restaurant, and it's really very fine food. They have their own gardens. They have their own suppliers of the wonderful cheeses of that peninsula. And it's just really, it's a great introduction to the finest of Italian, of southern Italian cuisine.
And remember, just south of the Amalfi coast, at the end of the Amalfi coast is a town called Paestum. It's not really a town. It's ancient Greek ruins, because a lot of people don't realize that Greece used to be much larger than it is today and included a lot of southern Italy. In fact, Naples is a variation on the word Neapolis, new city. It was founded by the Greeks. And past these wonderfully preserved Greek temples is the Kliento coast, and this is the homeland of mozzarella. This is where you're going to get the best, the freshest mozzarella you'll ever have in your life.
It depends. I prefer the mozzarella of Caserta, north of Naples. You know, there's a big debate in Naples between those who want the mozzarella from the south and those who want the mozzarella from the north. But you're right. There is some wonderful mozzarella down there, for sure. There's also some other wonderful. I mean, there's a great agriturismo near Paestum. Do you know this one, Reed? The agriturismo Celiano, where she has her own herd of buffalo, and they make their own mozzarella, and they also serve buffalo as part of the menu there.
I don't know that one in particular, but it's great that you bring up the phenomenon of agriturismo or agriturism. It's a way for people to stay on a working farm, and by legal definition, agriturismo is a working farm. They can only derive up to 30% of their income from taking and paying guests.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's going to be a vineyard and they're growing vines, whether they're going to keep goats and sheep and make cheeses, or buffalo, bufala, which is different than American buffalo, and it's what they make mozzarella from in Italy. You get a fantastic experience. You often get great breakfast, big farmhouse breakfast. You often can dine with a family, or at least dine in their dining room, for any 15-year-old person, maybe $20, for a huge, fabulous feast. There are a lot of resources. There are now hundreds upon hundreds of agriturismi spread all over Italy. It really started sort of in Tuscany and Umbria, near where Nancy's house is, but it's spread everywhere now. And if you go to my website at readsguides.com and scroll down, you'll see Italy is the featured destination, and there's a link right to all the details about agriturismi and how to find them and how to book them.
Very good. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we still have a moment for you. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. I know, Nancy, that lemons are especially favorites in southern Italy.
Yeah, especially in that region where you're going. Those are very famous lemons along the Amalfi Coast there. And they're raised in a very special way. When is it that you're going?
September 17th.
Yeah, that's probably not the terrific season for lemons, but you will see these terraces, these very narrow terraces, with a kind of propped up by oak beams, and that's what they grow the lemon trees on. And they say, most Italians would agree, that the best lemons in the world come from that southern side of the Sorrento Peninsula, where the Amalfi Drive is. That's a great place for anything made with lemons.
Is there a beverage called limoncello?
What do you say?
Limoncello is, the lemons are the size of grapefruits, and from them, among dishes, they also make, as you said, limoncello.
Limoncello.
Yeah. Lemon liqueur.
But you can make limoncello yourself, too. You know, there's no big secret to making limoncello. It is. Yeah. You must know this drink, do you?
I know of it. I have not yet sampled it, I don't think.
Well, you'll get it down there. You'll get it all over Italy now. It's one of those things, you know, because Italians are very particular about what they eat and drink, and they don't want something. If you live in the south of Italy, you don't want something from the north. You don't want aceto balsamico. But there are, every now and then you come across one of these phenomena that spreads all over Italy all of a sudden, and limoncello was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I had friends who own a restaurant in Venice. She, as it happens, is from Texas. He's Italian. He's Venetian. And she came to me one day and she said with her lovely Texas drawl, "Nancy, what is this stuff called limoncello that all the American tourists are asking for?" And I thought that was just a charming illustration of how parochial Italians and adopted Italians are. She had no idea what it was, and yet every American who goes there knows about limoncello and wants to try it. And it is wonderful when it's well made.
It's basically lemon zest and sugar steeped in essentially one step beyond grained alcohol. And it's absolutely delicious. It has to be served very, very cold out of the freezer, preferably in a glass that's also been in the freezer. And when you're in Sorrento, you'll just walk down the main drag, Via Santo Cesareo, and there'll be little limoncello outlets everywhere offering you free taste. There's also crema di limoncello, which is a cream-based version. It's fantastic. It's like dessert.
Can I give you a hint, though, of something even better?
Yes.
If you ask for Prosecco with a hit of limoncello, it's a wonderful drink late in the afternoon after a day of touring around, looking at the sights, and you're kind of feeling flagged and you want to revive yourself. I discovered that on a little trip down there with a friend of mine, and I don't know what inspired us promise to do that. But
I promise I will follow through on that.
Good.
All right.
That's very good.
Nathaniel, let's give you a chance here in Madison. Go ahead.
All right. I was just driving to Milwaukee from Madison, and I heard on the radio that you're talking about Sorrento, which is a town I happened to live in a bunch of years ago, so I clearly listened. Curious what you guys are talking about. I think it's a great little mini documentary you guys are doing about it, so I wanted to thank you for that.
Did you have a question?
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
For your thanks. That's wonderful.
We appreciate that. And let's see if we can get a question answered from Ken in Wausau. Hi, Ken.
Hello there. Yes, my wife and I will be touring Western and the Southern Sicily next year, and especially interested in Syracuse and the lodging, recommended lodging therein.
Yeah, Syracuse is my favorite place in all of Sicily.
It's
one of these ancient Greek capitals. It's got fantastic ruins, wonderful cuisine, such friendly people. My favorite hotel currently there is called the Gutowski, because the owner's grandfather was Polish, so it's kind of a funny name. But it's the Hotel Gutowski. It's right on the road around Ortigia, which is the island where the historic center of Syracuse is. And you have views of the water. It's sort of a wonderful cross between an ancient fisherman's house and a modern boutique hotel, and it's one of the most inexpensive in town.
Reed and Nancy, I'm sorry I have to break in. We've run out of time. It's been just a real fun time to listen to you talk about the cuisine and travel in Italy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you
My
very
pleasure.
Much. Reed Bramlett is co-author of DK's Eyewitness Italy, and Nancy Harmon Jenkins' new cookbook is Cucina del Sole, a celebration of Southern Italian cooking published by William Morrill. If you'd like a copy of this program, go to the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program 719G. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.